Start by telling us a bit about their React Lab and what they do.
Yeah, of course. React Lab, as you mentioned, it's research on active transportation. So we look at everything related to any form of active transportation. It can be walking, it can be cycling. And what I'm focusing on right now is micromobility devices. So also micromobility devices. Majority of the work is related to active transportation, but we're also taking interest in newer forms of transportation, like automated vehicles. A fun study going on right now, which looks at the interaction of pedestrians and automated vehicles at the sidewalk. So, yeah, interesting stuff happening in React Lab.
Excellent. And
What are micromobility devices, just to clarify?
yeah, that's something that we'll be talking about today. Let's ask you this. You guys bike, right?
I do a lot.
Very
Okay, so
poorly.
Gurman doesn't a lot.
what else do you see in the bike lanes and besides bicycles?
See, I guess like skateboards, longboards, a lot of the like scooters. There's these like
Exactly.
I've seen these new like
Exactly.
unicycle things that are like electric power.
Yeah, exactly. Any form of personal transportation, we have a word we use a lot in React Lab. We say human electric hybrid vehicles. So anything that a person can get on and it's easy to carry, it's not a car, it's not a truck, it's not a bus, a personal mode of transportation can be basically a micro mobility device. And the examples, an e-bike also can be a micro mobility device, and a skateboard, electric, non-electric. A unicycle, you mentioned the ones that are, I don't know, usually in circus. The non-electric ones also micro mobility. Actually, usually when I give talks in places that are not that familiar with active transportation with micro mobility devices, I start by telling them about one of my favorite YouTubers. He's called Ed Pratt. Younger than us, I think, Englishman who made his own unicycle and traveled around the world. And he documented everything. It's on YouTube. It's just Google Ed Pratt. So I give that as an example. Oh, look at this. These are not just toys. These are not just in circuses. A person can use this as a minimalistic mode of transportation and go around the world. It is quite possible to do that. And then I give another example. Like you don't have to go to England, in Canada, in Alberta, in 1970s, I think a person called Wally Watts made his own unicycle and traveled around the world. So it is a mode of transportation, I always like to say. And it's not just the regular ones without any technology in it. There's the you mentioned the electric ones, the self-balancing ones as well. There's also a teacher in Vancouver area, in New Westminster, who always uses his unicycle to travel to get to work. There was actually a report on him in Vancouver Sun. I'm not remembering his name right now, but yeah, if you Google it, yeah, these are interesting modes of transportation that are popping up, becoming more and more popular recently. And if I want to give you more examples, what else I can give you? Tricycles, also another mode of active transportation. You can call it micro mobility as well. And those who cannot, who those who are not able to balance themselves on a bicycle or want to have a better balance on their vehicle can use tricycles, and tricycles themselves can be hand cycles as well. And for those who have mobility restrictions. And what else? Anything else like mobility scooters and wheelchairs? These are all micro mobility devices, personal transportation devices, let's say.
Great. And what
Long answer
caused
to
you
your
to,
question.
yeah, no worries. What really got you interested in working in the React Lab in particular? Was there like a particular moment in your life that got you interested in active transportation?
Oh yeah, exactly. Because in here's the thing with civil engineers everywhere. I didn't ask you guys what you studied in. Are any of you engineering?
No,
No.
we both recently graduated. I'm going to start med school at UBC in September, and Alirat's starting law school in
Yeah, we're
September.
kind of like
Oh,
between
okay.
faculties right now.
Congratulations to
Thank
both of
you.
you graduating. But it's typical for engineers in civil engineering to be introduced to transportation late in their program, because majority of the program is focused on structural engineering. And once they get into the third year, fourth year, they start getting a couple of transportation related courses as well. It's a bit unfortunate, but it is what it is right now. It was the same situation for me as well. During my bachelor's, I did my bachelor's in Iran in Sharif University of Technology. And over their first year, second year, third year, I was into structural engineering. I was like, yeah, I'm going to build bridges, I'm going to build buildings and stuff. But then slowly, once I got into, I was also interested in research. Once I got into research, I was like, this is not something that I'm really interested in. I want to do stuff that have people in them, interactions with people, not just building, not just structures. Although I'm not saying it's bad. It's like folks are doing amazing stuff in structural engineering. But I got more interested into environmental engineering and then structure and then transportation engineering. I did some projects with the great professor Amir Samimi in Sharif University of Technology, and slowly came to the conclusion that this is going to be my work from now on. This is what I'm going to be focused in. And within the realm of transportation, there's so many things you can work on. You can work on public transportation, you can work on buses, trains, you can work on like airport stuff, you can work on maritime stuff, and there are autonomous vehicle stuff that are very hot right now. Everybody talks about them. And there's also this section, which is active transportation. And that was very interesting for me because as a kid, I would bike a lot. And growing up, it was sort of like a norm that you want to get a car and it means independence. It means it's a status symbol. And then slowly cycling becomes sort of a game to you. You play with your bicycle. You don't go to work with your bicycle. So that was sort of the mindset when I was growing up. And when I got my driver's license when I was 18, like, oh no, from now on, I'm just driving. I'm not taking my bike anywhere. But as I learned more, as I got educated more, learned about the cities that are cycle friendly, I realized that, oh, cycling can be a utilitarian form of transportation. You can go shopping with your bicycle. You don't really need to get your car to buy a carton of milk from grocery store. Okay. And when I found out that there are labs and universities actually working on transportation, I was really interested. I emailed my now professor, Dr. Alex Bogatzi, I think in 2017, 16, and showed my interest. Like, oh, this is my resume, this is my background. Are you interested in working together? And he got back to me, and we had a couple of interviews, and eventually I joined React Lab. And coming in, I had some ideas about what I would be working on, and then I started working, and I realized, oh my God, this is much more fun than I imagined. So after finishing my master's, which was going to be my goal, which was my goal coming into UBC, I had other projects that were I had a project that I was working on during my master's that was a 3-year project. So like 2 years of it was left to still work on. So I had a conversation with my supervisor Alex, and I was like, oh, I'm interested in doing a PhD and continuing this project. And I was like, yeah, let's do this. So I stayed and finished this project that we are going to be talking about today.
Great. We'll be right back here on Research Review after one short message.
By the way, this is somebody's favorite show. Hi, Dan Shakespeare here. For most of the stuff that I play, you probably think that I'm much older, but you know what? Most of you are probably way off because I'm only 23 years old. Tune into The Shakespeare Show between noon and 1 p.m. on Wednesdays. It's songs from before the 1920s to alternative stuff today, plus jokes and riddles, all sorts of fun stuff. Just put any of it on your iTunes if you need to. Pretty soon it'll be coming out on albums.
You are listening to Research Review on CITR 101.9 FM. My name is Alirat, and along with my co-host Gurman, today we're interviewing Amir Hassanpour, a PhD student in UBC's Department of Civil Engineering. So far in the past, but we've talked about Amir's educational background as a civil engineer and how he started working for the React Lab. We also talked about micromobility devices, which are human electric hybrid vehicles, and what exactly those are.
Great. So let's go into the specifics. So what exactly have you been working on?
So again, human electric hybrid vehicles, micromobility devices. The thing that's happening right now, like as Aliwood mentioned, in the bike lanes, right now we're seeing more of these unicycles, the electric unicycles. And there are many different types of vehicles that are just popping up. The push scooters, the electric push scooters, and even the unicycles have so many different versions. And the ones that your legs go side by side or go front and back, so many different versions of it. And I don't know, yeah, e-bikes also have different versions. Like some of them have throttles for if you want to ride them, and some of them have pedal assist, so you pedal and then it assists you and pushes you further. So the point was, there's so many of these vehicles coming and they're sharing a constrained space, the bike lanes, and they're also not regulated at all. So sort of everyone was panicking, like, oh, what's happening? They're coming in and we have no idea what they are, so let's study them. I think that's what motivated TransLink to sort of look at creating a grant for studying this this topic. And Alex Pagazzi, my supervisor, basically applied for the grant, the new mobility research grant, and we started working on these devices to learn more about them, learn more about micromobility devices. That's basically like a very high level of what the project is and what are the motivations for going into the project. But yeah, we can get into more details as well.
Yeah, so what were the main takeaways you got from the project? Go for it.
So we were thinking of brainstorming what we want to look at, what aspects of these vehicles we want to study, and what aspects of micromobility devices we wanted to study. And the thing that we focused on were two main things. One, their speed, and the other, how comfortable people are sharing paths with them. Actually, there's a third one, their mode share, which means how many of them are actually out there. Because we went in with the perception of, oh, these vehicles are taking over, they're becoming more and more popular. And we also wanted to know if that's actually happening. So we went out we studied different locations in Metro Vancouver, not just the city of Vancouver, in bike lanes. How should I say this? Physically separated bike lanes from cars. What's the word I'm forgetting? Off-street cycling facilities, mm-hmm. sort of, or greenways, basically, or bike lanes that are physically with a barrier separated from car traffic. We looked at different maps from municipalities in Metro Vancouver and decided on a couple locations to go out and collect data. And by looking at the maps and also a bit of local knowledge that we had, we decided on some locations, and then we went out and actually looked at the locations to see if there are good locations to collect data at. And then we ended up at selecting two locations on UBC campus, one Thunderbird Park and one near Exchange Residence. A couple of locations in Vancouver itself, Point Grey and Alma Street and Richard Street downtown, Arbutus Greenway, where else? North Vancouver, also one location in West Vancouver, two locations in Burnaby, and one location in New Westminster, and one location in Richmond. So we went out there. Have you ever been, Ali, you mentioned that you cycle a lot. Mm-hmm. Have you ever been on the bike lane and saw two hoses or two tubes crossing the bike lanes and you go over them?
Yeah, I've seen those, yeah, on bike lanes, and I've like also on like regular streets as well, I guess, for cars. Those
are exactly.
They're traffic, right?
Yeah, they're traffic counters. They have air pressure in them, and when you go over them and triggers the computer that's connected to the hoses, to the tubes, and it counts the vehicle that's going in. And since there are two of them, it counts, it exactly looks at when the first tube was triggered and when the second one. So with an easy delta X over delta T, it calculates the speed of the vehicle as well. So we do counting and we do measurements of speed for vehicles at those 12 locations. And the next thing that we want to know is what was, I mean, we're counting, but we don't know what it is. What is it that's going over the tube? So we mounted a GoPro camera also right next to the counters, the traffic counters, and synced up the result of the counters with the video data to look at what actually was going over the tubes. And this was basically our methodology for collecting a classified count and speed data. And then we went back and looked at the count and realized that, oh, these micro-mobility devices, they're not actually taking over. It is true that there's a wide variety of vehicles. We looked at, I don't know, 22 different categories of vehicles, but their mode share is quite low, around less than 10%. So still the extreme presence is from bike regular bikes, the non-electric conventional bikes. And then the next thing we looked at was their speed, right? Funny thing is the average speed of electric, actually, let me ask you this question, because the interesting thing about this project is that we looked at perceptions and we looked at actual data. So we could compare what people think and what actually is out there. So let me ask you this. I should have done the same thing for mode share, but forgot about that. We'll do the same thing for speed. What do you think is the average speed of conventional bicycles?
I would say, do you want to guess first, Grumman? Because I kind of have like a very precise number.
Oh, I was going to say like 20 kilometers an hour.
I would say 17.
Wow, the 17 is very close. But 20 also very, very close. The average speed of conventional bicycles that we saw was 18 kilometers per hour, around 18. So very good. Good job. Now let's do the same thing for electric bicycles. What do you think is the speed of electric, average speed of electric bicycles?
Let's see. 22.
I guess it depends on where you're going. Like if it's uphill,
That's why I say average. Like think of everything you think of and then average it.
30 kilometers an hour.
30. Wow, that's quite high. But I mean, Alirud, you mentioned you guessed it.
22 very
precisely.
It's right.
22 is right. Yeah.
This is all from personal experience. Yeah, it's like.
No, that's right. That's right. I mean, what we saw was that perceptions. Okay, this is something that I didn't mention, haven't mentioned yet. But we, along with measuring, along with doing a classified count and measuring speed, we also did a survey. And in the survey, we asked people, what do you think is the percentage of micro-mobility devices? And we elaborated anything other than regular bikes, conventional bicycles. And folks guessed about 15% on average. But the truth is, it's 5%. So folks are guessing about three times higher than it than the prevalence of micromobility is guessed three times higher than it actually is. And then we asked about speed. The speed of electric bicycles were on average guessed around 26 kilometers per hour. So the difference of electric bicycles and conventional bicycles, their speed was guessed about twice as it actually is. So Alirud, you mentioned it, you guessed it very precisely, and Gourmand, you mentioned it with a little bit of bias. So let's do a quick calculation. Yours was 12 kilometers per hour difference, and Alirud, yours was 8. The average will be 10 kilometers per hour. So it is about two times the actual speed difference, which is 4 kilometers per hour. So it's sort of matching with the results that we found out in our study as well. So we looked at the speed, we looked at classified count, and the interesting thing that we found out from the speed was that the speed of electric bicycles is actually not that high. So the risk for these vehicles coming in, taking over, and becoming more and more prevalent is actually not that high, because they don't change the average speed of the bike lanes quite high. They don't change the speed of the bike lanes much. And what else? There's also other vehicles. So we talked about electric bicycles. How about those sit down? How about those stand up electric scooters or mm-hmm. push scooters, basically electric push scooters? Or how about those stand up self-balancing unicycles? How fast are they going? Or how about skateboards, electric skateboards? How fast are they going? And interesting thing is their speed is also about 20 to 22 kilometers per hour on average. So they're also not going that faster than the regular bicycles. There are also more things we looked at the differences of speed in different grades, but I don't know, I can talk a lot about this project. I think you saw the report. It's like 100 and something page report. So I'm gonna stop and let you ask questions. So this was about speed and classified count, but there are also like speed modeling that we did. There's also the survey that we did, quite interesting findings from the survey as well. So I'll let you ask your questions if you have any, and then you can move on and talk about other things as well.
Great, thanks for sharing that. We'll get to the rest of your questions in just one moment after a short message.
About 40% of UBC students experience food insecurity. Sprouts is hosting a weekly produce market from 10:30 to 1:30 every Monday in the Life Building. With produce from local farms, students are free to take whatever they want. Sprouts Cafe is open from Monday to Thursday and is offering 30 free meals a day, completely free and no questions asked. They also host Community Eats, a completely free hot lunch that is open for all. Stop by and support the Sprouts cause for sustainable, accessible food at UBC.
You're listening to Research Review on CITR 101.9 FM. My name is Alirod, and along with my co-host Gourmand, today we're interviewing Amir Hassanpour, a PhD student in UBC's Department of Civil Engineering and part of the React Lab. So far in the past, we've talked about how many different types of vehicles, such as micromobility devices and e-bikes, are showing up, and a bit about the work that Amir's done and how these vehicles interact with other users of the road and bike lanes, as these are quite new and there aren't many regulations surrounding them right now. So Gourmand, I think you had a question to ask.
Yeah, the first question that came to my head was what impact would like the time of the year sort of have on this sort of thing? Because the weather in Vancouver is bloody dreadful. Once you get into like October, November, it's raining all the time. Does that affect like the number of e-bikes on the road, for example?
Oh yeah, it completely affects the traffic on the bike lanes. We definitely saw a drop in the usage of the bike lanes in winter time, because our data collection was four phases in four seasons, starting in the summer and ending in the third month after the summer. Oh my God, I gave away that I don't know the order of the seasons. But anyway, I'm an engineer. And in the off season, we definitely saw a drop, and the drop was, I don't know, maybe half as much traffic as it was in the summer. So yeah, we definitely see that.
What about the proportion of the e-bikes?
Okay, so once again, the percentage that we saw for e-bikes was around 4%, as opposed to 91% for conventional bicycles. And about 2% of the vehicles we saw was Mobi bikes. So we can add that to the conventional bicycles. So that will be, I don't know, 93%, 94%. Majority of the vehicles, vast majority of the vehicles were conventional bicycles, but a bit of around 4.2%, 4% to 5% of the vehicles were electric bicycles.
Right. And that 4-5% stay kind of constant through the seasons?
It varies. It varies by location. It varies by weather. And it varies by time of the day. But since we did not have a lot of data, all the electric bicycles that we saw in the city were at like 12 different locations and four different seasons. So we couldn't do a good analysis on how time of day or weather affects mode share, because you're looking at very sort of becomes like a rare event, becomes like a crash sort of, and you have to do crash analysis, you have to do rare event analysis, and that's not something that we wanted to look at. No, but right.
Yeah.
On different days, we had variation from 0% electric bicycles to 20% electric bicycles. So it definitely varies.
Now, you know, one question I have, because like currently I'm living in Coquitlam, yeah. City of Coquitlam, and you know, it's pretty hilly here relative to the city of Vancouver. Around UBC, it's more so flat. And you know, I got an electric bike around 2 years ago, and I've been noticing a lot of people around here getting electric bikes as well. It's pretty common to see that, especially in the past few years. And I would say like the biggest advantage for the electric bike, especially here, is just being able to help on those uphill sections, places where previously, you know, you wouldn't really even be able to ride a bike. They've been opened up due to having an electric bike. So has that been some sort of like effect that you've studied?
Yeah, exactly. You're mentioning a very, very good point. So the effect that electric assist, let's call, if you want to differentiate between an e-bike and a regular bike, should I have to say, the e-bike has electric assist, mm-hmm. and the e-bike doesn't have electric assist. So the effect of electric assist on speed is sort of that it electric assist sort of flattens the hill. Mm-hmm. If you are on a regular bike, there's going to be a huge amount of difference between when you are going on a flat road or on a downhill road, as opposed to when you're going uphill. But on an e-bike, the difference is not that much. And part of the reason that we think folks guess the speed of electric bikes to be so high is that the difference becomes really apparent when they're going uphill. And I mean, you mentioned that Coquitlam is very hilly, but Vancouver is also hilly. When I go off campus,
between UBC and the city itself, there's that.
Like, yeah, exactly.
Elevation difference.
When you want to go to UBC from Vancouver, there's pretty large hills that you have to go through in 8th Avenue. And over there, the difference becomes really apparent. Mm-hmm. And I don't have an e-bike, I have a regular bike, but I do see folks on an e-bike going, zooming past me, and like, oh my God, I wish I was on an e-bike. So yeah, the difference becomes really apparent. And I think it's a good thing. That's part of the reason more people are becoming interested in cycling. Going over, like, trying to ride a high slope hill is not an easy thing to do. And if you have an e-bike helping you do that and making it easy to do that, you'll be biking more. You're biking more. It's good for you. It's good for your health, and it's good for the planet. So yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, and the other benefit I would imagine is just like cost effectiveness. Like, I know how expensive it is. Like, I have a long commute to UBC, so I have a car, and insurance is expensive, and we all know how big the cost of gas is right now.
Gas, like, parking, everything.
Yeah. Do you have any like data on like the cost effectiveness of like a bike versus an e-bike versus cars versus public transport?
I don't have. We haven't done that study, but I own a bike, and since I bought it, I don't know, 2 years ago, I didn't spend anything on it. So, really cost effective.
Do you think, especially like right now, what I've noticed like in the past year, you know, gas fuel has been getting very expensive. Cars themselves, like just buying a car, has become more expensive. Getting a used car has become more expensive. Electric cars are getting more expensive because of battery shortages, and that's even if you can like find one. It's like 1 year waiting list for those. So, you know, really, I would say that like biking, electric assist bikes, and like micromobility, these can be like pretty simple and cost effective solutions, especially like given the current economic situation. Have you like been like looking at any trends that have been going on recently in this regard?
This is something that we wanted to look at. I mean, first of all, I want to mention something. You're right. Biking, cycling, and micromobility devices are great for as an affordable way of getting around. But the infrastructure also has to be there. I don't know, if you want to bike from Richmond to Vancouver, you have to feel comfortable to do that. Mm-hmm. And if you feel uncomfortable and unsafe, and this also ties into to part of the research that we've done as well, looking at how comfortable folks are sharing bike lanes with all sort of different vehicles. If you don't feel comfortable going on a bridge and with your bicycle, you're not going to make the commute with a bike mm-hmm. to UBC. If it's not easy to do it, you won't do it. And it shouldn't be out of necessity using a bicycle to get around. It should be out of choice, I think. But anyway, I digress. One of the things that we wanted to do was to look at how the usage of the micromobility devices changes over time. Initially, we were thinking of doing count and classification for 5 seasons, so 2 summers, so that we can compare and see how the trend has changed. But because of COVID, we couldn't do it. Like, the last phase of data collection got canceled. Mm-hmm. But we are hoping that soon, maybe next year, next summer, and we go out and do another round of data collection to look at the trend. But based on the sales data, and the trend is definitely upward. More folks are interested in biking for a variety of reasons than taking their car out or taking public transportation.
Excellent. We'll be right back here on Research Review on CITR 101.9 FM after just one short message. So please stay tuned.
Tribe Called Red is the hallucination with their new record, One More Saturday Night, featuring Javier Mighty, Tanya Tagak, and more, out now.
You're listening to Research Review on CITR 101.9 FM. Today we're interviewing Amir Hassanpour, a PhD student in UBC's Department of Civil Engineering and a member of the React Lab. So far in the past bit, we've been talking about micromobility devices and specifically about how electric assist bicycles help make biking easier in hilly and steep areas. of which there are many in the Vancouver area, and also about the effect that the increasing cost of driving is having on the adoption of bikes and other micromobility devices. So moving along.
One question I have, what is your like opinion on the current state of the bike network, not just in the city of Vancouver, but like Metro Vancouver as a whole?
I mean, we are one of the very, I was looking at a news report the other day and it said we are the sixth cycling friendly city in North America.
Yes.
Montreal being number one. Mm-hmm. We're pretty good, I have to say. But still, there's a lot of work to be done. And when you say Metro Vancouver, you have to look at Metro Vancouver, which doesn't look at Vancouver itself alone. There are many cities around the world, especially in Netherlands, that are building cycle highways, mm-hmm. which makes it really easy to go from suburbs. To different suburbs, to city centers, and this is something that we're missing right now. There's actually the BC Parkway Greenway that goes from New Westminster to downtown Vancouver. But other than that, do we have anything else?
There's the Central Valley Greenway, which is like a little further north from that as well. But yeah, that's pretty much it. There's not much in terms of, I guess there's the Arbutus Greenway as well, but that's just within Vancouver itself.
There's the Railway Greenway in Richmond as well. And I'm sure there are more things, but we can definitely improve our network.
And I think, yeah, that's really one issue. There's the whole network issue. For example, if I wanted to like ride my bike right now from Coquitlam all the way to like Vancouver, UBC, there's no real like dedicated infrastructure. I would have to go on like highways and major roads, you know, pretty dangerous and time consuming.
Yeah, exactly. That infrastructure is necessary. And I don't think per British Columbia's Motor Vehicle Act, you can bike on the highways.
No,
I don't think that's legal. I have to double check though.
No, not on the like freeways, like Highway 1, you can. I know on Barnett Highway you can. On Barnett Highway, there's like a, but it's just basically on the shoulder. It's pretty dangerous, you know. Yeah, so people have been killed there.
Yeah, exactly.
Because cars are going like almost 100 kilometers an hour. And you know, one thing I also notice is that like the bike connection between UBC campus itself and like the rest of City of Vancouver is also like not that great. I wish there were some like dedicated separate lanes.
You're right. Yeah, you're absolutely.
It's just if you want to like bike, it's just on the road where there's just like the little like bike lane shared with the cars on the road. It's
yeah, exactly. So when you're coming out of UBC, you have Chancellor Boulevard. You can go from Chancellor Boulevard has a good bikeway. That basically leads you to 8th Avenue, and 8th Avenue is a neighborhood bikeway, so it has very limited traffic, but still it's not a dedicated bike lane. You might, if somebody opens the door of a parked car, you will be getting doored. So you have to be careful there as well. But then beside that, on University Boulevard, there's the painted bike lanes, and if you want to take Marine Drive also, that's not even a painted bike lane. You have to share the road with the cars.
It's a shoulder, and it's pretty dangerous as well, you know.
Yeah, that's unfortunate, and hopefully that will change soon.
I know, it's definitely something I noticed, because like in UBC itself, the bike infrastructure is pretty good. City of Vancouver has some pretty good bike infrastructure, but there's not really a good connection between the two.
Yeah, that's right. There's also the 16th Avenue. 16th Avenue up until Blanca is pretty good, but after that, I think you're on your own.
Yeah. See, you know, that's definitely like one problem I feel like is like the disjointedness of the network. Like some places there's very good bike infrastructure, but then all of a sudden it ends. It just all falls apart. So you're on your own. It's really hard to plan certain trips on bike.
Exactly. So that's one of the measures of a good network connectedness in. And that a lot of researchers look at when they're studying networks in active transportation. The network should be connected, otherwise if you're doing like tiny stretches of separated bike lane, but they're not leading anywhere, they're not going to be useful. So hopefully that will change. Yeah, mm-hmm. That will change for the interesting thing is, if you look at the bike network in Vancouver, you can see that majority of the network is centered around downtown. Mm-hmm. So if you go towards South Vancouver, you don't see much network. But you know, that's distribution of resources, right? Eventually, mm-hmm. hopefully, eventually we'll have bike networks everywhere that's necessary. But that's going to happen slowly, and you have to dedicate funding to tiny stretches. And sometimes building bike lanes are coupled with sewage work, as an example, mm-hmm. or redesign of a road. So you have to wait until it comes the time for a certain road to get redesigned. But yeah, that definitely affects how comfortable folks are traveling. And I want to direct your attention back to the report. One of the things that we did was asking about how comfortable a traveler is sharing path with other vehicles. Interesting thing is, because I mentioned in the beginning that we only looked at separated bike lanes, separated cycling facilities, separated from cars. So you only have either pedestrians or other vehicles in the cycling facility that the respondents, the survey respondents mentioned their perceived comfort sharing paths with other vehicles in. Interesting thing that we found out was that gender was not a factor in how comfortable people are sharing paths with other vehicles in the cycling facilities. But literature says otherwise. When you ask about how comfortable folks are using the bike lane, generally men are more comfortable. That is because we build terrible bike lanes. That is because the bike lanes are designed by men, and as
I think
a result,
one thing is like
for men as well. But again, in our study, gender was not a factor, and I think that's because we only looked at separated bike lanes. We chose how powerful separated bike lanes are in how inclusive separated bike lanes are in helping everyone feel safe and comfortable in using them. So I think that's something that we should be looking at, like building more separated bike lanes in the region.
Yeah, and a lot of like unseparated bike lanes, like personally, like even I wouldn't want to use them because it's too great of a risk. When cars are traveling fast, a lot of people, they're just distracted. They're not paying attention. Yeah, it's pretty easy for accidents to happen.
That is so true, yeah.
Yeah,
if you're biking next to a bus or a truck, even the vibration and the sound is going to make you uncomfortable, let alone the risk of getting run over by it.
Yeah, aside from improving infrastructure, what else can the city of Vancouver do to, incentivize active transportation over like taking their car?
Okay, so interesting thing about this study and all the vehicles that we saw in this study was that right now none of them are regulated. Since they're not mentioned in the BC Act and in the British Columbia Motor Vehicle Act, it's illegal to ride them in the city or on public roads. There was actually another article about a person who got fined $400 for riding their electric skateboard in Vancouver. You can look that up. It's quite interesting. So if you ride your electric skateboard, you might get fined $500. So you have to be careful. Right now, the thing is, they're not regulated. They're not looked at. There's some pilots happening. There's the private electric scooter pilot happening in some of the municipalities. Vancouver is doing it. Right now, private electric scooters are legal. but all different sorts of vehicles are not. What we looked at was that these vehicles, the micromobility devices, they're not going too fast. They're not going much faster than the conventional bicycles. And the survey respondents, the public, is saying that they generally feel comfortable sharing paths with them. So we should look at regulating them. We should look at new policies in making these vehicles basically legal in the city to ride on, since they can definitely be a, first of all, you mentioned it, an affordable way of travel and also an easy way of travel if you don't want to pay for parking, if you don't want to, if you want to be more conscious and not pollute the planet if you go grocery shopping.
Yeah, and the last question I had is, like, looking forward 50 years from now, where do you think the state of active transportation is going to be in Vancouver?
I'm thinking we'll see more active transportation. I mean, that's part of the plan of the city. The city of Vancouver has the Climate Emergency Action Plan. And one of the goals of the Climate Emergency Action Plan is to have 2/3 of all trips being done by public transportation or active transportation. So we'll definitely see more active transportation in the region. This is from the goals of the city. And also, I think the public also wants to go towards active transportation, since it's an easy, healthy way of getting around. But we also have to have the regulation, the proper regulation for that to happen, and also the infrastructure.
Mm-hmm. Well, excellent, thank you. And, you know, we're going to just wrap up right now. I think we've touched upon a lot of good topics, but one last question I just had for you. After you finish up your PhD, what plan do you have? Are you thinking of, like, staying in academia and research, or do you want to go, like, work for companies, maybe public sector?
I love research. Yeah. It's amazing. Yeah. Part of the reason I decided to do a PhD. But yeah, I do want to experience working in industry as well, and more specifically in public sector.
Definitely.
So, yeah, working in the city, as any cities around Metro Vancouver, also maybe TransLink would be a very sort of a dream job mm-hmm. for me.
Yeah, I can definitely see you in a role like that. And, like, with all the knowledge you have, all the work you've done, you could really, I think, bring to the table a lot of good solutions.
Thank you.
Excellent. Anything else you had to share with us today before we wrap up?
I do want to mention something, because this is an important thing and we didn't get to talk about it. Mm-hmm. The mobility scooters and wheelchairs. Mm-hmm. They are a vehicle. They are basically a personal mode of transportation mm-hmm. that improve accessibility for those who have mobility needs. Folks in our survey have shown that they are extremely comfortable sharing paths with them. So I think we should make it easier for those with electric wheelchairs, for regular wheelchairs and mobility scooters to use the cycling facilities mm-hmm. as well. And then on the other hand, there is another vehicle called, we call it sit-down electric scooter. It's a bit hard to know what it is, but I'll explain it. Those are motorcycle-style scooters or moped-style scooters. Basically, the kind of vehicle that has a platform you put your legs on, no pedal, and a throttle for basically making it move. The moped-style scooters are much faster than any other vehicle that we have seen in the cycling facilities. Their average speed is close to 30 kilometers per hour, and folks in their survey have said that they're extremely uncomfortable sharing paths with them. Right now, they are illegal to operate in cycling facilities, but they are using the cycling facilities. And I think if you want to make the space more welcoming, more inclusive, and more comfortable, we will have to look at ways of eliminating the use of these vehicles in the cycling facilities as well.
Yeah.
So on one hand of the spectrum is the mobility devices, the mobility scooters, wheelchairs, electric and non-electric. And on the other hand, the moped style scooters. We want to welcome the mobility devices and also try to eliminate the moped style scooters that go very fast and also are very uncomfortable to share paths with.
Excellent. Thanks for sharing that with us. And thank you for joining us on the show today.
Thank you for having me and showing interest in our
research. Really appreciate that.
Yeah, it was a pleasure having you on.
Thank you.
This concludes Research Review on CITR 101.9 FM. We thank you for tuning in and listening this week. And just wanted to recap that was our interview with Amir Hassanpour, a PhD student in UBC's Department of Civil Engineering and a member of the React Lab. If you'd like to hear more from Research Review, be sure to visit citr.ca where you can take a look at our past episodes. Otherwise, you can tune in every second Wednesday and listen to us on air at 101.9 FM. We broadcast from 6 to 7 p.m.
This is John M. Bennett, and you are listening to CITR FM 101.9 in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. I'm forgetting who I used to be.
This is Ira Glass of This American Life. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. I have no idea what that means. Somebody just asked me to say this. Hello, hello, hello.